From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good evening. Welcome to the Crossover Wednesday edition of The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
And I'm WRAL State House reporter Travis Fain.
And although I did not believe it, I did not think it would happen, the House is done.
Course, you know, there's nothing like the threat of not being able to get home because of a gas crisis to speed you on your way. But yeah, you know what? I think I have beat some crow because I think I said, what, hope is not a plan last night?
Yeah. Well, clearly it worked. Of course, they did end up ditching a couple of controversial bills today after a fairly lengthy committee meeting. Now, this is after they went until 10:30 or so last night working on the bills that were on the calendar. And most of the stuff they had last night were the fairly non-controversial bills. A lot of just sort of administrative things, bureaucratic changes, et cetera. Today they came out and they removed a couple of bills. One was a lifetime concealed carry permit. They took that off of the House calendar today. And they also removed a bill that has got a lot of discussion that had to do with...
It's like a whistleblower protection bill for public employees. And, you know, remember in this context, public employees is going to include sheriff's deputies, police officers. And the question is, like, where do you draw the line between protecting someone for blowing the whistle versus maybe protecting someone who is about to get fired, blows a fake whistle, and thus gets protected? That's at least the debate that I've heard about it. But, I mean, there's been like four or five versions of this bill since this session. It's House Bill 7. When you're talking about House Bill 7, you know, in May...
It was somebody's priority, clearly.
It was someone's priority, but also there were a lot of issues as well as it went back and forth. So, dead for now. We'll see.
Another bill that appears to be dead for now is a bill that was in House State and Local Government this morning. It would have given some more budget flexibility within limits. More budget flexibility to schools. The sponsors were Bradford from Mecklenburg, and then Lofton also Mecklenburg. And so this was a response to CMS. They had requested this, but they wanted to do it statewide. It would simply have allowed schools to have a little bit more flexibility in how they use all that COVID cash that's coming in, how they apportion that. But the bill looked like it was probably going to go through just fine, but it was actually derailed in that committee. It got voted down after Representative George Cleveland and Representative Harry Warren and Representative Wheatley started questioning whether or not we really needed any more cash flowing into schools right now, whether there was enough accountability. So I was kind of expecting that to see that one surface today at some point, like in a hastily called rules meeting or something. But I suppose that is the kind of thing you can easily slot into the budget.
I was going to say, that sounds like something that's going to get jammed into the budget.
Yeah.
You know, page 240 or so of the budget, and the things will move just fine at that point. But, I mean, anybody who's saying, you know, the schools have a ton of money, I mean, a lot of government entities have more money than they can spend right now. I need to spend some time with the tracking sheets that I've gotten of all this COVID money, but I can't even tell you how much COVID money we've got total.
But one thing we can say about most of the COVID money that we've seen is that it is quite limited in terms of how it can be spent. And I suspect that's probably a lot of the consternation here because that might be money that could be moved. Other money might be able to be moved around the budget to be supplanted by the COVID funding. So. Anyway, that was interesting. A bill that did go through this afternoon to an interesting debate was one that would allow lawmakers to carry and other elected state officials to carry concealed weapons if they have a concealed carry permit here in the building, which at the moment is not allowed, and also pretty much anywhere they go aside from schools.
As long as they're doing their duties, as long as federal law doesn't prohibit it, which, you know, schools, and as long as they're not drinking, or have, there's a little phrase.
I don't know why anybody would think that lawmakers would drink.
There's a little phrasing in there, or have alcohol or an illicit drug in their system.
Yes.
So, that bill went through. The vote was, I'm sure, I haven't looked it up. It's what you think. It was some version of party line, or close to it.
They picked up a few Democrats, I believe. I'm not entirely sure about that. But there was a pretty interesting debate between Representative Kidwell and Representative, I think it was Baker, about who's scarier to who and carrying a gun and et cetera. So.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly who was bringing it up, but yeah, the upshot was she said that Keith Kidwell is not scary.
That was afterward. Anyway, the bill that definitely got the most debate and the most passionate debate today was the bill I think we mentioned yesterday about critical race theory, and this is the bill that would basically ban schools from teaching about systemic racism because they said they don't want kids to be taught that the U.S. has systemic racism. And so, you know, yesterday James Galliard talked about that in committee. Today he made many of the same comments on the House floor, along with a lot of other lawmakers in the Democratic caucus, black lawmakers and white, who talked about the issues. I mean, how do you teach the civil rights movement if you can't talk about Jim Crow? And what is Jim Crow if not systemic racism?
Yeah, and I mean, this kind of comes down to, like, I would encourage people to read the bill.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have Republicans standing up and saying, well, it doesn't ban it. It says you can't promote it. But, I mean, if you're a teacher, or if you're, how many teachers we got in the state, you're all having to kind of understand what you can and can't do. I mean,
how do you define that?
Chilling effect seems like a real reasonable expectation here.
Yeah.
And then there's also the, you know, whenever we talk about critical race theory, we talk about systemic racism. You know, when you or I write those phrases, we then write right after it a sentence or two explaining what that is.
Right.
And I feel like it's a really helpful exercise because I don't know when someone gets up and says there is no systemic racism and someone else says, yes, there is. They may be working off of totally different definitions of systemic racism and have totally different ideas. So, I mean, we end up kind of talking past each other, but... You know, the bill went through today on, you know, again, what I expect is a party line vote. It looked very close to it, if not right at it. And, I mean, you know, this is white Republicans, because I mean, it's not like there are any black members of the Republican caucus in the House standing up and voting for a bill where, you know, their black colleagues on the other side of the aisle are standing up and saying, this is mean-spirited, paramount to a book burning.
Yeah, I mean, these were... you know, also Representative Franklin, Representative Charles Graham, wrong Graham, Representative Charles Graham talking about his perspective as a Lumbee. You know,
yeah, I mean, the only Native American in the House.
A lot of personal stories about the different ways that you know, systemic racism has impacted their lives. And so, you know, I think it was notable that you did not hear a lot of Republicans stand up and talk about it.
Yeah, it was clear they had decided only John Torbett, the bill sponsor, would stand up. He stood up and spoke twice. Very briefly, just they were clearly trying not to get into it, not to have it be any more of a thing than it was going to be.
Incredibly ugly debate.
Yes, it could have. Child marriage.
Yes.
An agreement kind of on the Senate floor today to move it up to 16. There had been a pitch. It's right now it's 14. The pitch had been, well, let's take it up to 18. Let's not have 14-year-olds getting married. That got morphed because it ran into some
opposition
to, all right, well, you can still get married at 14, but only if the other person is 18 or younger, I believe, or under 18, maybe.
Well, it was no more than 4 years older than you.
There you go.
The way that it was worded. But still, I mean, even at 14, I mean, even if that's the case, do you really want a 14-year-old marrying anyone, right? So that was the sort of the gist today that it was the genesis for an amendment that Senator Britt ran on the floor that would change the age, the cutoff age, to 16 from 14. So kind of a compromise deal there. It probably won't make everybody happy, but it will probably make some of the advocacy groups who have been working on this a lot happier than they were. I mean, North Carolina, as I think we mentioned before, has one of the lowest, I think the second lowest or the lowest in the country.
Among the states that set an age,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so you know, anything at this point is an improvement, which is sort of a sorry statement to make, but they said that North Carolina has become sort of a nexus for child trafficking and human trafficking because of the fact that you can get married at 14.
And excuse me, I believe I'm conflating two issues there when I said among states that set an age. I believe I'm conflating the child marriage law with the juvenile prosecution law.
Yeah.
So strike that. We talked earlier, though. I mean, Senator Danny Britt, he seems to be involved in a lot of bipartisan compromises. You know, if there is a bipartisan compromise down here, and certainly if it's coming out of the Senate, has anything to do with the criminal code, seems like Senator Britt is involved, so that is certainly something to watch. His SB 300, which is the criminal justice reform bill for this year, there are a number of these bills. Some of them are in the House. This is the main one for the Senate. It's got some body camera language in it. It's got a new duty to intervene if an officer sees someone, another officer using excessive force. It cleared the Senate today. That crosses over to the House. And we'll see where those issues go.
I'm interested to see what the House does with the video, with the body cam stuff.
It'll be interesting what they do with the body cam stuff and also with the child marriage, because I don't know. I haven't asked anybody in the House where they are on that issue. I don't know that there's a particular roadblock there, but I don't know that there's not either. Back to the House. the bill that you talked about yesterday where insurance companies are going to have to pay for more when it comes to breast cancer examinations, that cleared easily today. So did the bill to lower the speed limit on Durham streets, residential streets. I spoke to Representative Yarbrough afterward. He no longer has a problem with the bill. He did not have a full understanding of the bill. So that was unanimous support, but you don't see it on the board because they took a voice vote only on that bill. I don't know why.
Local.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe they were just making sure. Maybe they were just taking precautions there to make sure that bill did not get derailed. But that bill, that the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit would only count on residential districts, right? Residential zones.
Yeah.
So, like, your major thoroughfares, that would not necessarily be the case for. Which I think is what Representative Yarbrough was concerned about.
And one, I mean, it only counts on streets that are a mile or less, so it's not going to be an issue based on what he was concerned.
Another thing that passed today is a bill we've been following a little bit that would fine doctors or hospitals or providers that bill the victim of sexual assault or their insurers for a sexual assault exam, also called a forensic exam. $25,000 fine for that. So that ought to get some attention, hopefully.
Yeah, that ought to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, and we've heard from, you know, some medical professionals saying that these exams can take hours, and, you know, that somebody needs to be paying for this. And the state said, okay, but it's not going to be the sexual assault victim, and it's not going to be their insurance.
All right. Also through the House today, a number of bills that deal with IDDD, various developmental or intellectual disabilities. One I think we've talked about before where you can get a little notation if you want it on your license if you've been diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum, so that the police officer sees it and knows, okay, if this person acts a little different, you know, I don't necessarily need to be concerned about that.
I don't know. Is it on the license? I thought it was on the record.
My understanding is it's a little thing that goes on the driver's license, but maybe I'm misunderstanding it. But if the officer runs the license, it's supposed to pop up. There's also some training for officers for how to deal with folks better. Also, if people are hard of hearing, there's training involved in that. I'll go back and look and see if it actually puts something on the license.
But important to remember, that is only voluntary. So
correct.
It's not like they're going to start making people have this notation. This is only for people who want it or their families who think that it would be a good thing to have.
Also, a bill clearing today to move the state toward becoming a model employer of people with disabilities. This is kind of a study bill, really, but it's going to encourage more hiring of people who have whatever disability and also develop some guidelines, improve the hiring process. It sounds like the supporters of this bill, and it moved, I think, unanimously through the House.
It's not surprising. I mean, you get Representative Bradford sort of really championing a lot of these bills for Down syndrome. Representative Zach Hawkins has a son who has autism. I mean, you know, there are more and more, especially as you get younger folks in who have these, you know, who have young kids at home. I think you're seeing more sort of understanding of some of these issues.
Yep.
And they're definitely starting to move forward on that.
Yeah, with bipartisan support. And tomorrow, Senate will be here. House won't.
Yep, and the Senate, I have not had a chance to really sit down and look at the calendar yet. I'm not sure that there's a whole lot controversial on it. But
you have jinxed us, Laura.
I know. It's knock on wood. But anyway, so that session is at 10 o'clock, and of course we will be keeping an eye on it and filling you in later here on The Wrap.
And no House votes until Wednesday of next week. No floor votes.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.